alcoholic. I actually feel a bit nervous doing this. I'm not sure what's expected of me today, but Kevin's told me you can say what you like as long as you don't tell any lies. So I'll try and keep it as truthful as I can. And I'm not so sure I like the name Old Timer. I never fitted well with that. But I was thinking just the other day of the people that are still around Reading AA that were around when I came in, and there's only, well, I like to think they're probably at meetings I don't go to anymore, but there's probably only about four or five I can think of that are still dodging around the meetings. But for me, AA's turned out to be the best thing I've ever done. I've been lucky enough in the job that I do, or did before the oil price, the arse fell out of the oil industry. I was able to travel a lot and work abroad a lot, and and AA was a great help in those places. When I'd be pitching up in some new city or some new country, and I didn't know anybody, and I'd get into the English-speaking meeting either that night or the following night, and I'd be home safe then. It didn't much matter. And in lots of ways, it'd be the key to a social life. I don't mean a social life within AA, because that's a different thing altogether. But through people I met in AA, I got involved with other groups that went to the theatre or enjoyed fishing or the cinema or concerts and stuff like that. So it opened, AA sort of impacted every area of my life. But I wasn't an enthusiastic member of AA. You know, I had trouble getting in the first place. The first meeting I tried to get to was a Thursday meeting in Reading, and I walked in on a scout meeting. And then I tried again on the Saturday, and I knew it was at this church here, and this time I barged in on a wedding reception. So on the first Tuesday that I did get into a meeting, this was me giving AA its last chance. And it was at my local parish church, so I knew where I was. And I always remember that night. It was a Tuesday night in early October. It was pissing down with rain, and there was a guy there taking off one of these yellow cyclist capes. Well, I didn't want to walk in on some other meeting by mistake again, so I thought, I'll ask this guy if he's going to the AA meeting. And then the committee in my head started the debate, well, what if he's not going and he's offended that you think he looks like an alcoholic? And I had all this madness going on. And in the end, I thought, oh, fuck it, if he's going, he'll tell me, and if he's not going, what do I care? I don't know who this guy is. Anyway, he was going, and I got into my first meeting. And it was at that first meeting that I met Walter, and he became a real fucking thorn in my side for a long time. But the longer I've been sober, the more I realised that guy saved my life, you know. And it was a sad day when he left us. But I have a great deal of gratitude for AA and for Walter in particular. And I remember going home from that meeting, and my wife saying, well, how did it go? And I said, well, I don't care what happens, I'm having a drink at Christmas. You know, and it's a common enough story in the fellowship, and I had the drink at Christmas, and I had the worst 9 months of my life after that. And I was still going to AA every night of the week, and I was blaming AA that I couldn't stop drinking. I spent a lot of time drunk in meetings, and going out to my car to get the vodka that was in the boot and all sorts of things. And throughout all that, Walter would always, he always had time to talk to me. And he gave me some stuff now that I smile at my stupidity. But there used to be a meeting in the old Battle Hospital, and I was in there, and I'd become quite a depressive sort of drunk then. Not suffering with depression, but just depressive, tearful. And he came over to me and he said, how's it going, John? I remember looking at him and saying, don't tell me it gets fucking better. I said, because it doesn't. And he said, you've got to stop drinking first. And I had lots of stupid lessons like that to learn. And Walter, he was a strange sort of relationship. He became my first sponsor. And it was a strange sort of relationship. I quickly, when I finally did sober up, I got a job in Norway, and you know, I'd only been sober about, I don't know, 6 weeks, 2 months or so. And I was working in Norway, so I'd come home every second weekend, and I'd see Walter maybe at a Saturday meeting and maybe at a Sunday meeting, and then after a while he'd say to me, how's that job going? I said, it's going okay, you know, and this went on for about a year, and he said, have you started step four yet? And there was always this gentle sort of nipping at my ear. Have you started this step four yet? No. Well, you really should get on with that step four. Next couple of weeks, I see him again and say, how's that step four going? I haven't said, well, you really should. A couple of weeks later, you done any work on that step four yet? And he just kept fucking nipping. And after this had been going on for what seemed like a lifetime, I said to him, look, Walter, I said, I haven't started a step four. I'm not going to do a step four, because I was going to be a 1, 2, 3, and 12 recoverer. I said, because I haven't got a sponsor, so I've got no one to do a step five with, and there's no point if I can't do a step five in doing a step four. And he said, I'll be your temporary sponsor until you find one permanent, you know. It was just the way he was with me. He just kept nipping at me. But there was other people around then as well. There was lots of... I was just sharing this morning. I think for any time anybody comes in, there's always one or two people in each meeting that they particularly identify with. And there was a few people in the fellowship that I identify with much more strongly than with others. Those people used to give me a bit of a hard time at times, but more often than not, it was okay. There was a few things. There was also the other extreme. There was people in AA that I used to think, what the fuck are they talking about? Before I got into competitive drinking, I had a big issue with drugs, but that the drugs were behind me. I just switched drugs. That's what I did, and I remember someone saying in the meeting, no, he was just an old person, he wasn't an old timer, saying, well, if you've got drugs, you can't mention drugs in here. And I thought, Christ, that's like more than half my life I can't talk about, you know. And for a long time, I didn't really feel a part of AA. I felt that, like, there was this barrier between me and the rest of AA. No one else has said that, it's just this one person, but, you know, I was this sort of person that had to, if I was in a room of 100 people and there's one that didn't like me, I'd focus on that one, never mind the other 99. You know? But I've got over that now. I don't care about the drugs. And in that time, I can't remember how many meetings were over, but they always seemed to be, I don't know if they were fuller than they were then, or whether it's just my rose-tinted glasses. But what I miss about my early days in AA, and I suppose this is all to do with the advance of political correctness and stuff like that, it always seemed to me, in my early days, people were much more straightforward. I always remember one incident where, in a room, some woman had shared that she'd always ticked the exemption box on her prescription so she didn't have to pay for her prescription charge. And then someone else shared in the meeting, well, that's thieving, you know, and tore in this woman for thieving. And he said, you know, you really shouldn't do that, because if you were to get investigated and you were to get prosecuted, and then you'd have the embarrassment of your name in the paper, that could lead you back to a drink. You know, so you should try and live an honest life and stop the thieving. And that's always stuck with me, because I think if you were to do that now in AA, you'd probably be excommunicated. But I quite like that straightforward, keep it simple attitude to recovery. And... the guy who said that's no longer with us, and the person that it was said to, I haven't seen her around meetings for a long, long time now. But I thought it was a good idea, then I started doing that. No, I didn't. But I've seen lots of changes over the years, but I'm not so sure that they're all good. But throughout it all, I've managed to stay sober. And The thing, I don't know what it is about AA, but even in that 9 months when I went back drinking, I was still doing a meeting every night of the week. And I think, from my very first, I'd like to say I was sobered up from my first meeting, but that's just not true. But from my very first meeting, I never stayed away. I've never thought that being sober or not being sober excluded you from attending a meeting. And any time I've ever got involved with any newcomers, I've always told them, look, just because you've had a drink, there's no reason not to come, because you, I think you never know when you're going to hear the one thing that's going to turn your mind around. And I think with me, it was just a case of osmosis, really. I just stuck with it. I think I knew from that first meeting that there was something about that AA had become like a sanctuary for me, because there wasn't much love and affection coming from the wife in my house when I was drunk every day. And I knew that I could say, well, I'm going to a meeting, and she'd never say, no, you're not. No, you're staying in tonight. And no one ever in AA, and this is the one thing I've always loved AA for. Not once in all that time when I was coming in drunk, I can't ever remember starting any trouble in a meeting or being rowdy or anything, but no one ever said, look, John, if you can't stop drinking, you can't come anymore. They just say, nice to see you, John. Keep coming back. And it became a little sanctuary for me until I was ready to actually stop drinking. And when I did stop drinking, it was the best place for me to be. And even now, I mean, I've been around AA now for nearly 31 years and sober for nearly 30 of that time. And I still do 3 or 4 meetings a week. And it has been the best thing that's ever happened to me, AA. It's touched every part of my bloody life. And every part that it has touched, it's improved. And all I really did was to pitch up and not drink. You know, I wasn't rushed into the steps. I know everybody's path's a little bit different in AA. And when I'm spot, I mean, I've been more settled in that. I've been in the UK for the last 2 or 3 years now. And I started sponsoring a few people. I don't think I'm a big book thumper. I'm not a step banger honorer. One thing I make clear to anybody I sponsor is that I'm not going to sort your problems out. That's your job. I share with you my experience, strength, and about my recovery from alcoholism. The rest of it, it's up to you. You know, I'm not into controlling anybody. I'm not into being controlled. I'm a great believer in listen to what everybody says and make your own decisions. Because I know when I was in my early sponsor, Walter was my first sponsor, and I couldn't have had a better first sponsor, because he never once told me what to do or what not to do, because I know enough about myself. And even today, if somebody started telling me, this is what you must do, it's going to be the last thing on God's earth that I'm going to want to do, even if I knew it was the right thing, you know. And if it went wrong, I would blame them. There's no doubt about it, I would blame them. So I don't do that with anybody. And everybody has a different path to walk in recovery. I mean, we all come from different backgrounds with different points of view and all sorts of different things going on. But there's a path for everybody in recovery, and I had to just find my own path. And the people I had sponsor me gave me the freedom to do that. All I was asked of me really was get to meetings on a regular basis and don't drink in between. But I'll just tell you a little story about Walter. Wake Brian up, anyway. I can get into a whinging mode around AA, more so when I was younger in the fellowship. And I was in a couple of meetings. Walter used to be at most of the meetings in those days. And I was whinging on about something. It must have been something really important. And he used to chat to me after the meeting. He said, how many meetings are you doing, John? I said, well, I'm doing 7 a week. I said, I do one every day. He said, well, get more meetings in. A little while later, I'm whinging around the meetings again. He says to me, how many meetings are you doing, John? I said, well, last week, I did 12 last week. He said, get more meetings in. So now I'm seeing a pattern here. So the next time it comes up, he says, I'm whinging. And he says to me, how many meetings are you doing? I said, last week, I said, I did 128 meetings. And without batting an eyelid, he said, get more meetings in. And I've always remembered that. And Yeah, I suppose the one thing about AA I will try and bang into newcomers and people who are whinging a lot is get more meetings because it seems to work. It certainly worked for me. And I always remember my first meeting. I was giving some great advice that first meeting because I remember saying to anybody who was there, I didn't know anybody that day. I said, "Well, how often do you have to come to these meetings then?" He said, "Well, how often do you drink?" I said, "Well, I drink every day." He said, "Well, get to a meeting every day. Pursue your sobriety with the same enthusiasm you pursued a drink." And certainly in early recovery, that's what I did. It wouldn't matter to me what the weather was doing. I just sit at home and think, "Oh, it's pissing down with rain, or it's blowing a gale, or it's snowing, or whatever." And I say to myself, "Well, John, would you go to the off licence in this weather?" And invariably, I would have done. I would have gone to the off licence in any bloody weather. Well, get yourself down the road. And luckily, there was a lot of meetings up in Tarlis then, in English Martyrs, and I only lived up the road from English Martyrs, so it wasn't too difficult for me to get to a meeting. But it's just getting my arse off that seat. But I'll do it for a drink. So I decided I'd do it to be sober, and I pretty much did. When I finally stopped drinking, I pretty much did what was suggested of me. And I can remember getting talked into the first time I did a chair. And it was, there used to be a meeting at Thatcham years ago, and there was always a meeting at Thatcham on Christmas Day. And that meeting used to cause more problems in my household than any other meeting did, because I'd go out there and there'd be sausage rolls and there'd be all sorts of little bites and nips and bits of Christmas cake and all the stuff I have trouble resisting. And I'd say to myself, "Leave the food alone, right? Go home and enjoy your Christmas dinner with your family." And I'd be all right until the meeting finished, and then I'd be picking at this and picking at that, and by the time I get home, I wouldn't be able to eat my dinner. My wife would say, "I told you not to eat anything at that bloody meeting," you know. And anyway, it was at that first meeting. I hadn't been sober very long. When I finally stopped drinking, it was in September. And I went to that meeting on that following Christmas Day, and they said, "John, can you do..." I said, "Well, I haven't got 6 months in yet." I think that was only about 4 months, 4.5 months. Although I've been around the fellowship then about a year, year and a quarter. And they said, "Oh, it don't matter." No. And of course, I was a bit more wrapped up in my ego and how important I was. Because I remember thinking, before I ever did a chair, I thought, when I tell them what alcohol's done to me, the struggle that I've had, that'll pin their ears back, you know. A load of fucking rubbish. All I had was the same old sad story of a young man's descent into active alcoholism. It was nothing glamorous about it at all. But I sat there and I started wittering on about everything that had ever happened to me, I think. And I realised now, after about 25 minutes, half an hour, people get twitchy, don't they? You start fidgeting, and they, you know. So I always watch for the fidgeting, and people go into the toilet. I think, "You've spoken too long now. You know, shut up," you know. But yeah, I've had to learn all that sort of stuff. But there's other common sense stuff I've learned as well that I've taken into the workplace. You know, if it's a small meeting, you chat for longer. If it's a big meeting, you cut it short, and it just gives everybody a chance. Because I know I'm the most important person in this room, but then everybody thinks that they are, you know, and they're all there for the same reason I am. So everyone gets a turn. But AA's, it's been... Yeah, it's been really good for me. A lot of the old timers that really helped me a lot, like when Walter passed away, I asked a guy who was to become. I had a bit of a problem with sponsors in the first guy I had asked it, but Walter wasn't the first person I had asked to be my sponsor. But the first guy I had asked, I got it completely fucking wrong. You know, it wasn't that this guy didn't have a good sober eye and enjoy a good life, but for me, there had to be something more to the sponsorship. And I remember I'd made arrangements to see him to talk about something, and he hadn't turned up. So the next time I saw him, I said, "Well, where were you? Are you supposed to meet me at wherever it was?" He said, "Oh, what?" So he gets out this little diary, and he starts, "Oh," he said, "Well, it's not in my diary." And I thought, I don't mean to offend anybody who keeps a diary, but I never use a diary. If it's important, I remember it. And I remember thinking, this isn't going to work out. You know, and when I look back at it, this guy was he was a very promiscuous homosexual, from an upper middle class family, first from Oxford in ancient Persian. I mean, they don't even speak that anymore, you know. And I'm thinking, apart from being in AA, we actually have no common ground at all. I come from an Irish working class background, and of course Walter was a perfect fit for me, really, because he came from the same sort of background, although he's a bit older than me, the same sort of background. And the guy when Walter passed away and I got a replacement sponsor, turned out to be a guy who worked in the same industry that I worked in, not in the same discipline, but in the same industry. So there was a lot of common ground there as well. And I found that that's always worked out best for me with sponsors, to have more in common than just being a pisshead, you know. And so that was the way it was. And I'm going to be struggling for an hour. So, but apart from all that, the nice thing I like about AA, well, the things that have impressed me with AA, I remember going over to Germany to work. I suppose I'd been about 3.5 years sober. And I had this is before the internet and all that stuff. I had a contact number for an English guy in AA. I was working in a little place called Ludwigshafen. And this guy's number I had was in Frankfurt. So I get into the office at the afternoon, first day. So I make this phone call. And this woman answers the phone and she says, I say, look, my name's John, I'm from AA. Can I talk to whoever is there? She said, oh, no, you can't. He doesn't live here anymore. He used to be my partner and we've split up and he's left Frankfurt. I don't know where he is. So I said, well, I was just looking for an AA. She said, I know someone who might be able to help you. Let me call her and I'll get her to give you a ring. So I say, well, okay then. So I gave her my office number. So about half an hour later, this other woman calls me and she gave me her name and she said, I'm not actually in AA, but I'm in Al-Anon. She said, all I want to do is to get to an English-speaking AA meeting. I said, and this was the number I had. Well, I have a friend of mine who's in AA. I'll call her and see if she'll call you. So about another half an hour goes by and another woman phones me up and she says, where are you staying? I said, well, I'm in this hotel in Ludwigshafen. She said, okay, I'll pick you up at 7 o'clock, something like that. So I'm in the reception at 7 o'clock, and this woman, in her third, about the same age as myself, she turns up and we get introduced, or I introduce myself, and she says, right, I'll take you to the English-speaking meeting. It's in Heidelberg, which was about another 45-minute drive away. So anyway, she takes me to this English-speaking meeting, and I get there, and I think, right, I'm home safe now. I'll get the local where to find for all English meetings, and I'm all right. But what always impressed me was, here I was, this self-confessed alcoholic in a strange hotel in Germany, and this woman who doesn't even know anything about me picks me up in the dead of night, takes me to a meeting, takes me home. Where would you get support like that, you know? And that's always stuck with me, how just the level of support you get from AA. I mean, I don't like everybody in AA, but I wouldn't want to see anybody struggling if they're trying to stay sober. And I think that's the attitude that most people seem to take. They'll go out of their way to hold out the hand of friendship and to support and stuff like that. I've never known an organisation like it, because it saves lives. It saves marriages. It saves careers. It's probably the best organisation I've ever known about in my entire life. It certainly has been for me anyway. But I've had some other strange going-ons with foreign meetings. I was working in the Shetlands a few years ago, 1998. And I found out I was going to be there every second Friday. I was going to be there. So there was a local meeting. The Shetlands isn't very big. And these little, I wouldn't even call them villages. I suppose about the size of this car park, some of these small little villages. And I thought, in my arrogance, I got the address. I thought, I'll easily find that place. Anyway, I couldn't find the AA meeting. So the following time I'm there, I look up the number for AA in the local Yellow Pages. And it wasn't a new Yellow Pages. It was about 3 or 4 years old. So I phone up this number. And I say to the guy who answers the phone, my name's John, I'm an alcoholic. I said, could you give me the address for the Friday night AA meeting? And he says, well, why have you phoned this number? I said, because this is the number that's in the Yellow Pages. He said, well, I've got nothing to do with AA. I said, well, it's not a new Yellow Pages. It's about 3 years old. And I said, so why didn't you tell somebody and get the number changed? Anyway, we end up getting into this blazing argument on the phone. So I think, well, fuck you. And I slammed the phone down. I slammed the phone down. Anyway, I find out where this meeting is, and I turn up, and there's a couple of lads standing outside smoking. You know, there's something about people in recovery. We can spot another recovering alcoholic from about 50 yards. So I'm thinking, I'll ask one of these three where the meeting is. So it's in the local community centre building that we're at. So I walk up to these three lads, and I say, can one of you tell me where the AA meeting is? And this guy says, oh, you must be John. He holds his hand down. So I look at him, I say, yeah, that's right. I said, but how would you know that? He said, well, I was talking to you on the phone on Wednesday. I said, are you the guy that answered the phone when I phoned up to find out where the meeting? He said, yeah. I said, well, you told me you weren't in AA. You didn't know anything about it. He said, yeah. He said, I did. He said, I came to AA 2.5 years ago. He said, I stayed sober for a year. He said, then my wife died. She died about 18 months ago. He said, I went back drinking. And he said, I hadn't even thought about AA until you phoned me up looking for the meeting. He said, so I thought I'd come back to the meeting. So I worked up there for about a year. And the whole year I was up there, I used to see him every second Friday at this meeting. And he seemed to be doing okay. I often wonder about how he got along, but the thing I like about AA is that miracles happen in this thing, and you never know what you might say or what you might do that helps somebody. And I've been around a while now, and I've often had people say to me, oh, you made some remark about something that really helped me. I'm thinking, what on earth was that? You just never know how you're going to help somebody. And I like to think now, you know, if that as an old timer, I hate that expression, old timer. That one of the best things old timers can do is to keep pitching up at meetings, because it shows the newcomers that it works, and it works on a consistent level. I was in a meeting with Kevin back there today, and what I found out with AA didn't stop me drinking. That was a decision I came to, and I came to that decision because the pain of drinking became more than the pain of whatever sober eye could bring me. And I remember the first day I stopped drinking. I often smile now, because most people think the first day they stopped drinking was their first day sober. Well, I stopped drinking in early September, and I don't think I was sober for about another year. You know, that was my first day without a drink. It was a long time before I got sobered up. There was a little thing that happened to me about a year sober, and it changed my view on what I thought sobriety was. And what had happened, I ran into I've lived most of my life in Reading, and I did a lot of drug taking and stuff in Reading, and I ran into a guy that I used to get involved with drugs with, and he offered me some speed, amphetamine, to anyone who doesn't know, this is probably old slang now, speed, is it? And I said, no thanks, Anyway, he planted this seed in my head, and for a couple of weeks after, I was working in Norway then, a couple of weeks after, I was thinking, well, now I could go and score that speed. It's not alcohol, so it wouldn't count. You know, I'd still be... And this thing was really rattling around in my bloody head, you know, and in the end, I decided, well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to get the Concise Oxford Dictionary, and I'm going to look up the word sobriety, and if it doesn't mention drugs, I'm going to go and buy these drugs. So I looked up the word sobriety, and it didn't mention drugs, but it didn't mention alcohol neither. It said an absence of insanity, and I never bought the drugs. And ever since then, my definition of sobriety has always been, for me anyway, has always been an absence of insanity. Because for me to go out and score these drugs or cannabis or any other shit like that, or to take a drink, would be an act of insanity. It would start with a lie. I lied to myself that, no, there's nothing wrong with you. You can do this now, which is absolute madness. I tried all those experiments before I stopped, and I couldn't find a way to drink. Because what I found out with the drinking was, you know, I'm amazed sometimes at how many stupid lessons I had to learn. I remember sitting in the Sunday morning meeting before I'd finished drinking. Before I'd actually finished, I'd go through periods where I'd be on it for a week, then off it for a couple of weeks, and on it for a week, you know. And there was a guy who used to turn up at the Sunday morning meeting. He used to be in Gun Street in Reading at that time. And he sat there and he was saying, well, he said, I'll get drunk now on a shot of scotch. And I remember thinking, you arsehole, no one ever got drunk on a shot of scotch. And it was in the summertime. And I'd planned to pick the wife, and my kids were young, and my kids were about 4 and 5. And what I planned to do that afternoon, I was going to treat the wife, I was going to pick her up after the meeting, go out to Henley, get a boat out on the river, maybe buy a couple of bunch of flowers and be a good husband and father. And I remember walking out of that meeting with this resentment about getting drunk on a shot of scotch. And I went into the off licence and I bought a little quarter of a bottle of vodka. And I drank that right outside the shop. I went back in again and bought another quarter of vodka, drank that straight away. There was no flowers, there was no boat on the river, there was no nice afternoon at Henley. And what I learned then is that first little shot of vodka changed the way I thought. I had no chance after that, and I was straight back in the shop for another one. And so I have a good idea of what sanity and insanity feels like, you know. And even though I haven't had a drink now for almost 30 years, I can still lose that. I can still get into some of that insanity with just stupid thinking. The thing that would gets to me most is frustration. And my biggest problem today in life, I was chatting this morning, it's not alcohol or drugs. They haven't been a problem for me for a long time now. But it's other bloody people. You know, they can piss me right off. And often do on a daily basis, you know. My latest upset at the moment with other people is parking. You know, Christ, people parking. I joined some walking club a little while ago. And one of the places they start a walk on a Wednesday is at the Solling Rugby Club. And it's quite a good-sized car park there, all marked out in white lines and stuff. And I usually get there early because I've bought a paper and I look at the headlines before the walk. And I get in there and the car park's reasonably empty. So I just spin the car around so I can drive straight out. And I'm watching people coming into the car park and they're faffing around. They don't want to park here. They want to move there. They're across the bloody white lines. I'm thinking, how do they get a driver's license? Someone must have given it to them, you know. But the difference between now and when I was drinking, I can let that silly stuff go within it. I can catch myself doing it and think, what difference does it make? You've got your parking space, you know, you're safe. And so I deal with that. I mean, I'd like to say that I think for a long time in early recovery, I was known as Angry John around Reading. I like to think that it takes me longer to get there now. I'm not so sure it does, but because, you know, patience and intolerance were two things that I still ask for as part of my daily prayer. But you never catch yourself being patient. You never catch yourself being tolerant. You catch yourself when you've lost it, you know. And I like to think that it takes me longer to get to that losing it point. So it's progress, I think, you know, maybe not perfection, but progress. And the one thing I smile about in AA, you know, in at the end of my drinking, I had strong views on capital punishment, abortion, religion, you name it, I had a strong view on it. And I'd always try and convince you that my view was the only view worth having. Well, I've been sober a little while now, and I still have views on that stuff. But I know my view can change depending on the position I'm in. I mean, take capital punishment, for example. If somebody was to kill one of my sons or grandchildren, I'd say, yeah, hang the bastard. But if it was my son that killed one of those children, I'd be saying, well, maybe that's a little bit severe, you know. So my view on these big, important life issues can be flexible depending on where I am in the situation. I've learned that, so I don't take life too seriously anymore. I don't take my alcoholism too seriously anymore, neither. I know that if I don't take a drink, I'm going to be okay. And that's as hard as it has to be for me. You know, I've gone through the steps a few times with my people who are sponsoring me and the people I've sponsored. And I think I have a fairly open view on it, but I'm sure there's no shortage of people in AA that would be quite happy to tell me where I'm going wrong. But it doesn't matter. Again, I was chatting with Kevin earlier. You know, for the different types of people that come into the fellowship, from all sorts of different backgrounds and live different sorts of lives. We could all find a way to live comfortably sober if that's what we want. And the one thing I like about being sober is that I really like it. You know, once I got used to it and once I got settled into it, I really like it. And I never blame my... I don't blame my... What am I trying to say? I don't think I'm an alcoholic because I'm quick to anger. I don't think I'm an alcoholic because I can be impatient and intolerant. I don't think I'm alcoholic because I'm Irish Catholic. You know, I don't blame anything on my alcoholism. If I have a bad day at work, so I have a bad day. Non-drinkers have bad days. And the one thing I've learned in recovery is that I have no more issues than non-alcoholics have. It's just that when I chose to deal with them, I chose to deal with them through drugs and drink, and that became my problem also. And the great thing about AA is that by listening to people, listening to their points of view, attending step meetings, big book meetings, and all the other stuff, and getting an idea of how other people view the world, it's changed my view of the world, and it's changed my view of myself. That's the best thing I've learned in AA is I've come to understand myself much better. And all I ever really done was to pitch up and listen, you know, and do the odd task. I mean, I was given some very good advice on my early meetings, like, if you ever ask to do anything in AA, unless you've got a very good reason not to do it, do it. And so whenever I've been asked to do anything, I'll say, yeah, okay, and I'll give it a go. And it's paid off really well for me. The great thing about AA and recovery for me has been it's improved my relationships with everybody. With my kids, my kids were brought up in a sort of sober household. I mean, they're only 4 or 5 when I stopped drinking. The wife's not so easy because she can press my buttons a bit at times, you know. She's going deaf now, so I can say all sorts of things now and she doesn't hear them. And I said, well, I told you. And it's made me more open. Yeah, I think it's made me an easier person to live with. Not everybody would agree with that. But I don't care, you know, I'm sober today and life's good for me. And I know this is a spiritual program, and I have no problems with that. I'm Irish Catholic, but I thought in my early recovery days, I thought Buddhism always looks like a nice religion. So I thought, well, I'll educate myself on Buddhism, see if I fancy converting. And eventually I was looking for one of these like idiot's guides to Buddhism. Anyway, I was working up in Aberdeen, I was in Waterstones there, and they had this book on Buddhism. It was Zen Archery for Buddhists. So I've always been of the view, if I don't know where I'm starting from, then I'm starting from right here, right now. So I picked this book up. And if you want to get an insight into Buddhism, don't get a book on Zen Archery for Buddhism. Yeah, I struggled with this book, in the bin it went, you know, And a few years later, I was working in North Africa with a Thai lad, and he brought me back this, like the Idiot's Guide to Buddhism. And I started reading this thing, and it must have been a direct English translation of a Thai book. Didn't make any bloody sense to me. So in the end, I thought, well, what difference does it make? Stick with what you know. So I stayed Catholic, you know. One thing I like to add with the spiritual side of this program is that since I've been sober, I like to think I'm more spiritual than I was when I came in. I like to think I'm more caring, more helpful, but I've also earned more money than I ever earned when I was drinking, travelled more than I ever did when I was drinking, been to more rock concerts, more theatre shows, seen more cities, done a whole... Everything, every area of my life has been improved as a result of not drinking. My work's improved. I stayed in the same industry, and I'm sure there were times when I thought, fucking John. I mean, I know in early recovery, a guy was saying, oh, well, we're a bit concerned to you at work because my career seemed to start off, yeah, John's quite good at what he does. And then they were, yeah, John's quite, he's all right, but he likes a drink. yeah, well, if you didn't drink so much, you'd be all right. And then it was, yeah, he drinks, and that was where it was, and then I stopped drinking, and it sort of... I thought then, you know, work would be difficult because everybody knew. It wasn't like I was a secret drinker. I mean, everybody could see I was pissed nip up from morning to night. And but people are very forgiving, and things just got better. And AA's touched every part of my life in a really positive way. It's been the best thing that's ever happened to me. And the one thing I can never seem to get my head around, right from my early days of recovery, is there's always been a nagging thought for me, is why when people come in and they get sobered up, why would they stop coming? I mean, for me, this is the very thing that straightened my life out. It's the very thing that's given me everything I have in my life today is a direct result of coming to AA. Why would I stop bloody coming? You know, and so I get a little bit, not concerned, it's up to people what they do, but... As I said at the beginning, I was laying in bed the other night just thinking about how many of the people that were around when I came in are still around, that I see still around the fellowship. And in Reading, there's about five, I think. And I'm sure lots of other people have moved away and are banging around other meetings or just maybe died. You know, as I'm sure lots of them have died in good, healthy, sober deaths. But I like to think, you know, I always like to see people who've been around longer than me in meetings that I know, because it gives me a little bit of a sense of security about it, you know. And it's always been, I don't like being the oldest, I don't mean old in age, but the longest serving sober member. I don't like that. And yeah, it's been AA's been great for me. Anyway, I'll shut up there. I can't, I'm worn out now.
I can't think of any more lies to tell.
Yeah, thank you, John. You know, just huge thanks again for standing in at such short notice. You know, great chair, great for us all to listen to, and you know, the final chair to what's been a good weekend. So, yeah, thank you very much. As we all voted for earlier, now going to do the book countdown. Hopefully, we got the book at the back. Mick's got it. Yeah. Where do I need to start? I don't know. 50.
Yeah.
49. 48. 47. 46. 45, 44, 43 and 6 months, 42, 41, 40, 39, 38, 37. 36. 35. 34. 33. 32. 31. 30. 29. 28. 27. 26, 25, 24, 23, 22, 21, 20, 19, 18, 17, 16, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. Three, two, one, 11 months, 10 months, 9 months, 8 months, 7 months, 6 months, 5 months, 4 months, 3 months, 2 months, 1 month. I think that's everybody. So, what's your name, sorry?
Me, Sarah.
Terry will present you with the big book that everyone should have signed. If any, well, I haven't got it. So, Sarah, we will get you the signed book, which Terry will give you when everybody signed it before you leave. Okay. That's the end of our old timer sharing. Just got a short closing section to read, and then we'll pack up. So this is just a short extract from AA Comes of Age, page 281. We may not need a general service conference to ensure our own recovery, but we do need it to ensure the recovery of the alcoholic who still stumbles in the darkness, seeing the light. We need it to ensure the recovery of some newborn child inexplicably destined to alcoholism. We need it to provide, in keeping with the 12th step, a permanent haven for all alcoholics who in the ages ahead can find in AA that rebirth which brought its first members back to life. This weekend's aim, following our second event last year, was to carry the message of our old timers for the AA of the future. There will have been 12 recordings of old timers who, in their own words, told how AA got to Saturday the 9th and Sunday the 10th of April 2016. It's with a touch of sadness we have no recordings of the pioneer first generation of alcoholics, Tommy G, Walter, Jesse, Jimmy A, and many more we heard mentioned this weekend. Just before the Serenity Prayer, I'd like to thank everybody who's helped this weekend and made it a great weekend, and particularly our speakers, John, Sue, John, Nick, and Jack, and Jim yesterday, Miles, Tom, Jim, John, Terry, and John today. The original wording for today's name, the original name of this event, was Indie Old Timers. We dropped the Indie this year due to a bit of confusion, but it was around the fact it's an independent event, not funded by intergroup or outside the group of the Friday and Saturday meetings at Watlington House. All costs for this event have been covered by that and last year's event. Next year, the venue may be elsewhere, depending on capacity. We'll be selling tickets, probably, and flyers will be issued much earlier, and that's something that we've picked up. The event was financially sound last year, and whilst that's great, it would have been heartening if attendance was more noticeable. If you want to hear previous speakers, we can send you a link, an electronic link on email. There is a book at the back. If you've not put your email address in there, please do. We can also send a link for everyone who's spoken this weekend. If possible, give a suggestion or two to assist with old timers for future events. And we'd appreciate anybody wanting to help out. Even occasional support would be appreciated for our committee. Please do feel free to stay and chat afterwards. There's no rush to leave, especially seeing as we're going to be finishing a little bit early. So please do stay. And I don't believe there's anything else to add other than just to close the weekend with the Serenity Prayer. Can you join me in the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Red one?
Yeah, can you just let Bill get in a space?
Yeah, okay.